98% pure potato.
98%
pure potato. Well, hello and welcome to the eighth podcast of 98% Pure Potato. My name is John Griffiths. I'm one of the authors of the book, and I want today to talk about the planning cycle. The reason for this is that in the last couple of days on Twitter, there's been quite a lot of interest in something that got put out by Richard Shotton, literally a scan of a page of the book, looking at five questions. There's been a bit of confusion about this, so I want to clear it up. First of all, what is referred to there, the wording isn't quite right, and Jeremy Bullmore emailed me to give me the correction, and so there may have been a bit of confusion because a lot of the retweets are about Bullmore's five questions towards the creative brief. Just to make it absolutely clear that what Jeremy Bullmore was getting me to get right was the five questions in the planning cycle, which was designed and written by Stephen King, one of the founders of Account Planning. While Stephen King was the planning director at J. Walsh Thompson, Jeremy Bullmore was one of the creative heads, and they worked very closely together on the development of it, but it's very much Stephen King's baby, not Jeremy. So I just want to make that clear. And also, what Jeremy wanted me to understand was that it's not simply five questions, they are in a loop, they're a cycle. So I thought it would be helpful for me just to explain a little bit more about the planning cycle. Now, if you want to read about it in published work, the first and best place for you to go is a masterclass in brand planning, subtitled The Timeless Works of Stephen King, which is edited by Judy Lannan and Mary Baskin, and that contains a whole lot of papers, most of them by Stephen King, so that you can read some of his best work. And the particular paper which is relevant to this is one called Improving Advertising Decisions, and you'll find it on page 73. However, there's a catch, and there that is that the paper was written as an address to the Market Research Society, and therefore it focuses far more, when it goes through the planning cycle, on the role of research, which is a very important part of the planning cycle, and the different roles at each stage, depending on the question that you're asking. So there's quite a lot that is missing from it because of the context in which it was originally given. Now, what I've got is an unpublished document that I'd like to take you through in summary form, which is part of the planning guide, which was produced for J. Walsh Thompson planners in the early 1970s. Perhaps next year, in 2018, in the anniversary year of the invention, if I can call it that, the founding of Account Planning, we might persuade J. Walsh Thompson to produce the planning guide again for us to all benefit from it. But in the meantime, this document floats around as photocopies and is handed around but isn't out in the public domain. So that's what I'm going to be using right now. So just to explain that it's described as a framework for planning advertising, and it is a cycle. And here are the five questions which actually circle round. The first one being, where are we? The second being, why are we there? The third being, where could we be? The fourth being, how could we get there? And the fifth, are we getting there? And then that goes round to question 5 3/4, which is back to one again, which is, where are we now? Because obviously, if you've gone through this cycle, if you've done your job properly, then you will be somewhere different. So you don't simply go around to the beginning again, it's more like a spiral. Where are we now? We expect to be somewhere new. And Stephen King talks about the advantages of using this kind of framework for planning advertising, and I just want to go through with them. The first point is, it's a continuous cycle. It's recognizing that as we develop communications, there has to be a continuous process of learning and modification and responding to changing circumstances. So as soon as you do something, the circumstances change. Therefore, you have to go around again and say, so now, where are we? So it's a cycle, and I think that's important. His second point is that feedback is built into it, because There's no point in going back to the beginning again saying, so where are we now, unless you have a way of determining where you've moved to and whether you're clear about where you're moving based on where you've been, where you've come from. So it's a much more complex system of feedback than is often talked about. I think there's a real danger that, and Tim Ambler has certainly talked about this extensively, when we get locked into ROI, that the only question that anybody appears to care about is, have I got the money back that I spent, I invested in this communication spend? And it's much, much more complex than that, because if we're setting proper advertising objectives, what we should be doing is to say, well, what changes are we bringing about in the marketplace? What changes are we bringing about in customer understanding? And what effect is that happening on our own brand and on our own sales? So it's much, much more than ROI. The third thing he then goes to talk about as an advantage is that it's comprehensive. I think it's really important that we try and answer all the questions, so we don't simply say, well, I'm part of a process which is producing advertising, and so therefore I'm simply going down a particular line of development and I'm just ticking boxes to make sure I get from step one to step five or however many steps are on your process. So we do need to go right through this and ask ourselves the hard questions all the way through. Otherwise, we're going to have unspoken assumptions which are going to come back to bite us. King's fourth point is that it's creatively free. It's based on questions, not on procedures or imperatives. I think with imperatives, he's talking to rule-based advertising development. I think with procedures, he's really got a point here, because I would argue that the way in which so much advertising is produced now is very much going through a system where you check that you've done all the things, it's due diligence, and you go through. It's a process. This planning cycle is not intended as a process for producing advertising, but an intellectual process for asking yourself what advertising is supposed to be doing. And he finishes this section by saying, this is a stimulus, it's not a straitjacket. These questions are open-ended to give you the freedom to look for imaginative solutions. His fifth point is, it's disciplined. Answering questions is itself a valuable discipline, but the point is that he wants to focus on the results, the outcomes that you're going for, rather than spending all the time on the methods or the procedures you're using to achieve them. The issue is, what are the outcomes that we're trying to get, and are the methods that we're considering the right ones and sufficient to allow us to get the outcomes that we're going for? The sixth point, and this should be very clear as I work through the five questions, is the clear roles for research. Not only that it needs to be evidence-based and there needs to be research, but actually with the way in which we use research is different for each of the different questions that we're asking in the cycle. And therefore, it's not simply a question of saying, oh, I've got one particular source and I'm just going to go back to that over and over again. Because based on where you are in the cycle, you ask different questions and you need different kinds of evidence. The seventh point he makes is it's a true marketing mix. This is really important, because he's saying this is about the brand and where we take the brand forward. We don't simply march in and assume that advertising or communications, I'm using the words rather loosely, interchangeably at the moment, which I'm sure someone will pick me up on. But the point about this is that it may be another part of the marketing mix which is far more significant in producing the change that the planning cycle is looking at. So we don't simply immediately march in and saying, so what are we advertising to say or to do or whatever, until we've actually understood what we're trying to bring about. And therefore, it's the whole of the marketing mix that we're looking at. He concludes by pointing out that we can't actually go through this planning process as an agency or as a supplier alone. It has to be done with the cooperation and active participation of the client, because they have the answers that we simply don't have as agencies. So those are the seven reasons why he thinks the cycle is important. So let me just take you through the five questions now. Here's the first one, where are we? That's fairly obvious, and I've got a long list here which I shan't go through in terms of market size, buying patterns, usage patterns, motivations, and so on, but you would expect this to be the case. King also makes the point that we're looking at this comparatively because we're comparing ourselves with the competition. We're looking at the company's position relative to others and where the brand stands relative to other brands in the category. where we stand in terms of the marketing activities. Are we doing things that they're not doing? Are we just doing all the same thing as everyone else? And of course, one of the issues here is to what extent might we be in a situation where a competitor might be outspending us dramatically and we're always working to a disadvantage, either because we're way behind on market share or we simply don't have access to the same resources that competitors might have. He then goes on to talk about comparisons with product, the difference between our buyers and users versus the buyers and users for competitor products, and the kinds of responses which our existing buyers and users have towards the brand as it is now. Now, when he looks at this, there's a whole page after that, which is on the kinds of research that you need to have to answer those questions. It's not just a question of desk research, market data, but that we need to have both qualitative and quantitative research to answer it. And it's quite interesting when he looks at buyers and users' responses that he expects the research that's produced not only to deal with the emotional response of buyers and users, but with the rational response and the sensual response. In other words, what is their experience of using the product and buying the product? So the point that he's making here is that qualitative cannot be used as a substitute for doing the big numbers. We have to do sizings to know exactly how big the opportunity is, but he sees qualitative research as acting as an illuminator to answer the why questions of the large-scale findings. So that's the first question, where are we? Why are we there? He's made separate, and I think that's really interesting. Almost the distinction between analysis and interpretation. Analysis, where are we? Interpretation, what does that mean for us? Now, partly that's looking at trend data in terms of saying, how do we get there? But it's also as a recognition when we look at, for example, market entrants that may come, brand challengers who can come out of nowhere, that often they have read the market differently. They've been able to reframe the marketplace in a different way, in a way that favors them and is a disadvantage for existing brands in a marketplace. So why are we there is asking what are the factors which are have led to the current position of the brand and competitors. Now, but as I said already, it's not simply a question of what's led to where the positions are, but a positioning is in effect an interpretation, a way of looking at the world, and there are always other ways of looking at the world. So we need to think about that, and it forces us to bring out our assumptions, whether we've inherited these from our competitors, because that's the way everyone looks at this particular market category, or whether they're the things which the client takes as a totemic and terribly important, but which may not actually be true as soon as you move away from the client's perspective. But the why are we there is a way of starting to free ourselves from the unconscious assumptions which are around the marketplace. And what's interesting here is that when King goes on to talk about the implications for research, he says, we use the same kinds of research, but we look at the data differently. And he points out that correlation is not causation, so we have to be very careful before we leap in there and say, well, this is how it is, and this is why how A is influencing B. But also, just because people say something is important and say something is driving the market doesn't mean it's necessarily true. So we have to be very careful about received wisdom, and it's really in this why are we there where we start to challenge the received wisdom and to recognize that we are not dealing in certainties. And from this question, we need a sensible, reasoned working hypothesis, which may be aligned with the way the rest of the market thinks, but may be entirely different. But this is the opportunity for us to think differently. Then we come on to three, where could we be? Now, it's very easy to set goals immediately and to say, well, this is what I need to do. King breaks this down in terms of three terms in which the answer has to be found. First of all, could we change our position in the market? Where could we be in the market? Market leader? Second brand? Could we be in a different sector? Could we increase our profitability? Could we be less reliant on price cuts and promotions? So in other words, is the question where could we be one about changing our position in the market? The second one is changing the way in which people buy the product or use the product or getting more of them. All those kind of questions around purchasing and usage, it's changing the relationship in terms of how the products are bought and consumed. The third area is in terms of brand responses, where the brand could be repositioned in relation to competitors. could we get people to feel differently about our brand to the way they feel now, which effectively amounts to a repositioning? What new feelings, what new beliefs, what new experiences could we give people? Now, you'll see from that that that's very different to simply saying, what do I want my advertising to do as an objective? Because it's asking far more open-ended questions about where the brand could be in a matter of 12 months' time and further on than that. And obviously, those changes that we're talking about are interrelated, because if you work on any one of them, it will change the dynamics with the other areas. And then when he looks at the role of research, what's interesting here for question number three, where could we be, is that he sees that research is used in two entirely different ways. First of all, as a stimulus, in other words, to help us to make those creative jumps, not to what is right in front of us, but something which could be, which isn't actually happening yet, but a new reality that we're moving towards. And so in that sense, does the research give us the inspiration that we might actually be able to get somewhere new? This is really where insights become so important. And he comments that small-scale qualitative research is at its most useful here. Now, the second use of research here, what he calls the deductive part of the hypothetical deductive process, which is by far, I think, the longest phrase or word that he uses here, because this is all in very plain English. But what he's basically saying is, if you've already been through your questions one and two, you may have data there which invalidate your hypothesis. So be very careful before you rush on and start saying, yes, we could definitely do that, because you may have data which already contradicts it, which you would therefore have to deal with. So that's where could we be? Question number four, how could we get there? And he breaks this down into four sub-questions, which is assessment of the means of achieving the objectives, deciding the role of the advertising and the creative strategy, developing campaigns, that's creative treatments plus getting the right channel selection, and then what kinds of feedback do we need to modify where we're getting to and to improve where we're going. So that's all about optimization. So the point that he's making here is about assessing the means, which is what kind of marketing mix are we going for here. He doesn't immediately assume that we're leaping straight into the advertising, but to say, how else could we achieve this answer to the question, where could we be, unless we've looked at the marketing mix as well. So he's saying there could be changes in product, pack, price, and all the rest of it. Then in two, deciding the role of the advertising. This is an incredibly important area, which I think planners consistently forget about. What do you expect the advertising to do? What role do you expect it to do? Do you expect advertising to be doing all the work or a very little part of the work in conjunction with something else? How does that work? And King breaks this down in terms of the direct role of advertising in saying something, driving sales, and the indirect role. And here you need to understand that King perceives that advertising has a much more important role indirectly in terms of the effects it has. And this was a very much a credo with J. Walsh Thompson, because they recognized, particularly with their position in the marketplace and the client base that they had, that there was huge value in long-term brand building for their clients. So therefore, their role of the advertising worked largely through indirect means because of the way in which it reinforced the brand's reputation. However, we need to recognize that advertising can work directly and indirectly, but if you don't know the difference, or if you don't care about the indirect effects of advertising, then you should think twice, because King thinks those are far, far more important and powerful than the direct ones. And that's something that would be worth discussing. So he then talks about how the creative strategy comes from the brand strategy, but has more limited aims and ones which are much more specific to the advertising, and to think about the desired responses in terms of changes that the advertising is setting out to achieve. And then he talks about developing the campaigns themselves, which is breaking into creative development and to media. I need to rush on here just because of the limitations of time. And then the fourth thing is to start to think about the feedback. What are the kinds of feedback that you need to get some sense as to whether the creative development is on track or not? Are we developing the right kinds of creative ideas? And do we think that the campaign that we're putting together is likely to be successful? That is not simply channel selection or finding the cheapest channels, but saying, how do the channels work? This is the qualitative assessment of how media works. And it's also worth asking ourselves the question, is the amount of money that we've set, is that sufficient, insufficient, or oversufficient for what we're trying to do? So that concludes question number four, which is how could we get there? And then question five is, are we getting there? And again, it would be very dangerous for us to simply pull back and say, well, that's a bad evaluation. It's not. It's asking much bigger questions. Are we getting there in terms of all five questions? Are we changing where we are so that we can go back to say, where are we now? That's not simply a question about saying, have we measured in terms of our objective? And what King divides this into is into pre-exposure questions about, are we getting there? In other words, before you've even run the campaign, how do you use the evidence you've got to get some impression as to, does it look as if this hypothesis is going to work out and your campaign is going to start to make these differences? And then, of course, far more familiarly, the issues about post-exposure, after the campaign's exposed, what is the change that we're looking for that is measurable versus question number one, where are we now? And what he asks is, what we're trying to do is to answer the kind of question, have the people that we specified changed their responses to the brand? If they have, has this resulted in the changes in behavior aimed at in the marketing plan? If the responses have changed, but the behavior has not, are our brand and advertising strategies wrong? If the responses have not changed, is it because the objectives were too ambitious? Or is it because the advertising is ineffective? Have we allowed long enough? If the advertising seems to have worked, precisely how did it work? Because, by the way, advertising almost always works differently from the way you think it's going to work. What is the model of the process in the marketplace? How does it relate to the role we set for advertising? So these are the five questions. And once you've been through this fifth question, which is, are we getting there? We are then ready to go round to ask question 5 3/4, which is, where are we now? And of course, round the whole thing goes again. Now, if you hadn't grasped by now how important the planning cycle is, it is one of the most fundamental tools that planners have ever been given to get them to think creatively about what advertising strategy is capable of doing and how you go about closing these loops. As I said, it's not a process. It's not a way of ticking boxes. It's a way of thinking creatively, not only about what advertising does, but what it is capable of doing. And I commend it to you. I suggest that you turn to page 73 in the Stephen King Book of Papers, but that we carry on hassling JWT and saying, why not produce the planning cycle and the planning guide as a commemorative thing. But that's me done for this particular podcast. And thanks very much for listening.